On this episode of Japan 2.0.
The hype is real.
So what do you think? Because I think in our first Hokkaido podcast, I mentioned like it seemed like totally a place that I could retire. Mystical world of game and wonder, arcade sensors like no other, nostalgia, yeah, every moment, everything is the wanna jump all on it, damn. Walking through these halls, my childhood is written on these walls, I breathe the air deep down, I know this place is where I belong, my destiny, my wildest dream, my fantasy, my inspiration and my energy, everything up to this point, this place has led me, yeah, there's a place that's better, my fascination can't go on forever, so real, like a faded meeting with a brand new new shape from beginning.
2.0.
Hello and welcome to Japan 2.0. This is our volume 2 of Hokkaido.
That's right. And we're also going to talk about snowboarding.
Snowboarding in Hokkaido. Yeah. Yes.
I haven't been snowboarding.
You've not.
But I do have some questions for you, David. So I'm going to kind of play, you know, the questioning host.
That's right. You have been to Hokkaido before, though, so that's why this is the volume two, and this is my first time going. And back then, we were talking about it, and you'd gone in the summertime.
Yeah.
And I'll kind of start off with a bit of an echo from that.
To beat the heat, you know?
To beat the heat. So if you want to, this doesn't really continue that talk per se, but if you are going to go up to Hokkaido or Sapporo in the summertime, or you just want to hear some more content, go back and find that episode. But the big debate of why it's taken me 9 years to get to Hokkaido was always just between my wife and I of what season to go. We talked about this a bit before. And I was always team summer or spring. I wanted to go there to beat the heat, like Matt said. And my wife always said, no. If you're going to go once to Hokkaido, you know, it's got to be during the winter in the snow.
Yeah.
So I guess she went out. But the reason why is that I got really into snowboarding in the last year. And it's definitely the kind of dream spot to be. So that's what kind of converted me to not being stubborn in that fight, and I gave up and went during the winter.
Were you ever interested in going to like the ice festival?
No.
I mean, you don't think that seems cool? Because I always thought, I think in the previous episode of Hokkaido episode we did, I think I mentioned that I really want to go see the ice.
It's definitely cool, and if I was going to Hokkaido for like my fifth time or something, I think I'd be ready to do that. But I just know if I went at that time, all the restaurants, all the shops I want to go are going to be like packed. There.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about it more from a pragmatic kind of point of view of just being around Japan around festival time and holiday time. I just know that you're not going to get a real feel of that city, you know? I'm such like a city person, and the feeling of a city matters to me, that it just felt like I would get a weird first impression.
Do you know, did they do the ice festival this year, or was that canceled?
I don't know if it's been canceled or not. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
But something about Sapporo has always felt to me, I could end up living there one day. It's a very livable, good match for me. I think it's maybe about, yeah, I lived in Michigan, so I grew up in a snowy area, and you know, it's a big enough city. I wasn't in the nature or anything back at that time, but something about it, just something about the name, and it just always felt some weird connection to it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think I just wanted to save it and make sure it was a really good time.
Does it go back to like having your first beers in the States that were Sapporo
was,
you know?
Was always my favorite Japanese beer. I think it was more just the can that it comes in, which, by the way, it does not come in that cool can that you get in North America and in Japan. In Korea, though, it comes in that same can.
Yeah.
In case you're wondering, those ones come from Montreal, where the real Japanese Sapporo's, the boring cans, the ones that come from Japan. Yeah, I don't know what it was about Sapporo. I guess just a different island, it's familiar, you know, to where I grew up. But, Yeah. So I went to Sapporo for 2 days, and then we went to like a ski village for 4 nights called Niseko, like a 2-hour bus ride from there. And we'll talk a bit about Sapporo first, because Matt's been there before too. And yeah, what are your big memories from Sapporo when you went? What are some things that you remember? How did it feel different from somewhere where we live out in Kobe and Osaka?
Yeah, so a lot of times my wife and I, when we go to traveling or we go to a different location here in Japan, we don't necessarily have something in particular we want to do. That's mainly because all we want to do is eat donuts or eat food and eat, you know, go to do shopping, and that's about it. You know, like we'll do hiking or we'll go to a zoo or
you don't look up restaurants?
Museum. Oh yeah, like, well, okay. I look up all that stuff before I go. But we also like we have this idea of kind of just happening into things. So we'll do some research, but we don't
always necessarily stick to that, and we don't always necessarily plan things out. So in some ways that's good, because we end up doing things that are surprising and we didn't expect. Yeah. But in other ways it's not so great, because we might miss out on like a cool art show or a cool, like, you know, venue, or when we come back somebody says, oh, did you do this? And we go, no, we didn't do that, we missed out on it, you know. But then it gives you more reason to go back. So that's kind of been our philosophy, you know. It's always kind of the wandering.
I think that's like a good living travel plan, you know, like a place. Yeah. Again, if you live somewhere, you don't need to like obsess over doing it all in one go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can kind of come back there.
Yeah.
Whereas if I go somewhere and I know this is my one, you know, I'm gonna go to like Scotland, let's say. I'm probably gonna go there once in my life, so I will plan that more.
Yeah, of course.
It's a place I can get to a little more easily.
Yeah.
My family rule is we choose one restaurant per day and one non-food related activity per day. And yet got those two things to do. That way you make sure something's going to happen. And you quality check, you know, you read the reviews, you make sure they're going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
And then the other two meals or the other activities, yeah, you just fly by the seat of your pants.
Oh, that's cool.
That way you're not held down too much. And even that one rule a day thing, you know, look, if you start off somewhere and it's just going really, really well, you say, oh, we'll just push that back to the next day, you know. So you got to be flexible. But anyway, why were you framing your trip with that
point of view? Well, with that in mind, you know, like, we really didn't do all that much, just relaxed, you know. I mean, we didn't go, we did go to the zoo. We went to the Modern Art Museum. And I think for most people that's pretty, like, you know, boring. We went to the Sapporo Museum. Yeah. That's another thing we did.
The beer museum?
Yeah, the beer museum. And had and we did some of the stereotypical things that you do in Sapporo, which is have curry, soup curry.
That's a big thing I want to talk about, yeah.
And then we also had Genghis Khan, which is basically like, I guess it's mutton over a grill.
That's all right. It's like yakiniku, but with lamb, right?
Yeah. And so, yeah, that was really good. And so those things were cool, but we really didn't do, you know, we didn't do snowboarding, obviously. You know, it was still a little too warm to do. You know, we didn't do swimming or anything like that either. You know, we didn't go to a beach.
Did you do a lot of parks there? I kind of remember you guys talking about parks a lot.
Yeah, we went to parks all the time. We'd get food and go outside. We'd drink a lot of coffee.
There's a lot of nice parks in Sapporo, right?
Yeah. Did a lot of shopping at the big department stores and went into the basements. And there was a ton of good food in the basements. We did, you know, cheeses and not a lot of Japanese food, really, other than ramen and curry soup.
Yeah,
but still, you know, we had a good time.
I'll tell you what, there's no parks in the winter or if they're there you can't tell because they're just covered in snow.
It
was one of the things. There's a really long skinny park, it's called Odori Park.
Big Sapporo Tower. We spent so much time in Odori Park. Yeah.
See, I got a hotel that was like right by it because I'd heard good things about it.
Yeah, they have a canal there, and it's just like a really relaxing place to take like a coffee or a sandwich. And yeah, that was where we spent a lot of time, especially since really in the summers the weather is much cooler than it is in Osaka or here in Kansai. Mm. So. Yeah, really recommend it if you want to beat the heat. You know, if you live in Japan or if you want to come in the summer and you don't want to be sweating your butt off, then yeah, you got to go.
Yeah, that's a good reason to get people to go in summer. So anyway, we got there during the winter, and I thought the ski village I was going to, I knew it was going to have a lot of snow. I looked at the kind of predictions, but I wasn't really thinking Sapporo was going to be snowy, and we were going in mid-March. I was even thinking like, should I bring like a t-shirt or two, you know, because like it's mid-March, it can't be like that cold. I didn't even check the weather in Sapporo. But yeah, when we arrived and took the train in, which is about 40 minutes from the airport, it was dumping snow. And I was like, whoa, okay, even in mid-March, you know, it's snowing here. And you know, you see these pictures online when you look up Hokkaido of like these walls of snow. Have you seen them before? You'll see
the
street.
Yeah.
I thought that was like, you had to kind of go to like a special place to see that. Or it might be like certain situations. No, like the whole place is just, that's everywhere. Any street you see, which obviously there's streets everywhere and sidewalks everywhere, right? There's just walls of snow. I'm 6'2", you know, my height at least, or wow, more, sometimes double my height, like 10 foot, these perfect, they're very flat, you know?
Yeah.
Some machine must come through and plow them out.
Yeah, the plow machine.
Those are snow machines everywhere still in March.
So I wonder how much, when you got there,
how many inches or feet or centimeters of snow did you see just on the ground? Like
that was already there?
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard to tell because, I mean, if you're looking at the streets, they were clean. But, like, again, yeah, anywhere it wasn't a street, like where grass would normally be, you'd assume, I would say, yeah, 6 feet of snow.
Just 6 feet of snow that fell.
Yeah, but it wasn't, like, fresh. Like, it's been piling up, I assume, all winter, you know?
Wow, yeah.
But then, like, we had one really sunny day when we were there. It was, like, you know, probably 40 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
Fahrenheit, sorry, 40 degrees Fahrenheit. And, like, it was just water everywhere, like, these, like, little rivers running. I was worried, like, is it going to flood? Because all the snow was just melting, right?
Yeah.
But another kind of, like, first thing that grabbed me that I wasn't prepared for was just the snow was so dirty there. And I grew up in the Detroit area, you know, which we definitely get nasty, dirty snow. Everyone who doesn't know snow, they romanticize. Like, oh, snow's so pretty and nice. I'm like, nah, if you live in a city, it's not. It just gets really, it gets really disgusting and dirty.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure that that's what this was actually. Later we found out as we're walking around Sapporo, was there were all these pellets. So there's like these green little, like machine's the wrong word, a receptacle. Like every crosswalk would have them. A crosswalk or like where you see like a major light. And it looked like this from like the 1960s.
Uh-huh.
Very kind of seafoamy green, kind of that retro. If you're watching Pleasantville, like really cool design. I'll show you the picture.
Yeah.
I'll put it up on the Instagram. And there's even English on it. And it says in there, like, grab these at your own, like, take them at your own, and it'll help you, like, throw them down on the street. And a lot of, I'm guessing what it is only shop owners are responsible for cleaning up the sidewalk in front of their shop. Because you'd be walking, and some are just so clean. You know, there's big piles of snow on the side. But then you'd be going, and they'd be like, a mountain of snow on the sidewalk. So it'd be clean, 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 mountain of snow for like 3 feet, clean, 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 mountain of snow for like 2 feet. And it's just like these shopkeepers weren't doing it. And the neighbors said, nah, we're not doing that too. So if you're riding a bike or something, you couldn't ride a bike like on the sidewalks in Sapporo because there's just all of a sudden out of nowhere. So you'll be walking and you gotta just figure out like how to get over this. And you see like these girls and like these heels. So anyway, the pellets come in and that I guess when you're going over those that it gives you like some grip.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah.
So you can kind of just throw that down. It looks like hamster food. You ever see
the
cylinders?
Yeah.
And you just toss it down. But because of that, that stuff kind of, I don't even know what it is, but it's brown and it just looks really dirty. So it's just those pellets, I think, are in the snow, making it more dirty than your normal kind of city snow.
Yeah, I know when we lived in South Korea, they used to throw salt down all the time.
Right.
But, I mean, they say the environmental impact of throwing salt down all the time is terrible.
So growing up in Michigan, salt was definitely the standard. But you're not seeing, like, help yourself to some salt and toss it down.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
That would be...
That's kind of cool that they offer that, though.
Very interesting and a very unique feature that, like, I couldn't look away from. And it's one of those things that maybe I've seen before because since then, I've seen some of my old students who I follow on social media. And they must have gone to Sapporo. This is just in the last month. And they posted up those machines too.
Huh.
They just took a picture of no contacts. And I was like, it's kind of like, if you know, you know. I'm like, oh, you're in Hokkaido. You're in Sapporo, you know? But I never noticed them before or anything. So, yeah, that was kind of a big takeaway. And I was just staying right downtown by Odori. And it's a real kind of nightlife city, which I didn't take. It reminded me most of Osaka, I would say. It's a little grimy, a little bit older. And like, yeah, big kind of nightlife, people out, you could just tell people are drinking, you know, like they're a bit loud and boisterous and a lot of kind of neon glow. And, that was really surprising to me. You know, I thought it'd be more of a kind of sleepy town. Now I'm not saying there's like clubs. I doubt there's a big club scene there, but just a ton of izakaya.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Izakaya bars, a lot of snack bars and stuff. There's a really famous one with the bunny girls. Did you see that one?
Yes,
and maybe they don't do it in the winter, but yeah, you walk by and there's a lot of girls in like the bunny.
I know the exact suit
Playboy bunny
about.
Costume, you know? And, and so like when we were there, we were like, oh, okay, I guess this does have like a red light kind of appeal, you know, to the city, right? Like, I mean, there is that part of town.
Yeah.
And that's the part of town. Most people are going to end up there because there's a lot of good dive restaurants in that neighborhood too.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you did
I would call that downtown. To me, that's where, like, if you're looking up any kind of franchises, that's where they were.
Right.
So I thought this is kind of the downtown spot.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't really venture much outside of that.
Well, it's similar to, like, if you come to Osaka and you come to the Namba.
Mm.
And you're kind of in the Dotonbori.
Yeah.
You know, it's very similar vibe. Yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta go.
You gotta check it out.
But yeah. It's kind of surprising, I think, from a very Western, maybe Christian fundamental point of view. Like, it's kind of shocking that this is like the number one tourist attraction, but it's also like red light district.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, kind of seedy.
Yeah. To me, I'm pretty numb to it. Like, it's just, it's normal here.
But, well, yeah, living here long enough, you realize like those neighborhoods are in every neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it does have that. But then when you go on the other side of town, you know, kind of where like the fancier malls are and stuff, it's very muted. It's kind of, just kind of sleepy almost.
Okay.
I mean, even when we were there, I guess had COVID just started. I guess it was during COVID.
It was during COVID. I can't remember. It was during one of the lulls in COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. But it seemed quiet, you know, and I guess the borders were closed, so it was quiet. But, yeah, and then but at nighttime, like that whole the downtown part of town just blew up.
Yeah. So like the architecture is another thing I'm always kind of interested in, and I don't know, from some people's point of views, they'll say every Japanese city is the same cement concrete jungle, you know, there's not a lot of variance. But if you're a person who's into nuanced differences and minuscule differences, you'll notice stuff, and I definitely noticed differences there, and everything's kind of short and wide there.
Yeah.
I don't know if you felt that, but more that's kind of housing. So like where people live, they're kind of these squat boxes, I'd say, where here you get more of like a rectangle up on its side, you know?
Yeah.
Very skinny and tall. Where there, yeah, things are short and wide. Definitely I noticed things seem to have more room. Everyone says the streets are really open and stuff, and I didn't feel that. Yeah, compared to Tokyo, of course, it's going to be more wide. But it felt kind of like Kansai, and felt like how wide the streets were downtown.
Well, when you step outside, I don't know if you went down to the river. There's a big winding river that runs parallel to the canal, and it's kind of on the outskirts of town. In that area, it's very like open, wide. Like you're looking at the sky, like in every direction, you know. Mm. So I think that's what people mean, you know. Here in Osaka or, you know, Kobe or Kyoto, you know, I mean, it's very, Kyoto maybe is the other exception, but you often are looking around, you're looking at buildings in the horizon, you know,
right.
Whereas if you do step out a little bit outside of like the main part of town, there are those kind of areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'll name off a couple of places I went to that I'd recommend if you're going to go there. But before that, kind of just final thoughts on the city. Where like my wife is pretty skeptical on Sapporo. She just thought, yeah, it's just gonna be like another place, not a lot going on. But she was really sold. Again, we were just there for 2 days, but she was like, oh yeah, we gotta come back here.
Yeah,
I think the thing she liked most was there's an open fish market that's pretty well known. They're famous for hotate, scallops, and crab out there.
Oh yeah,
which,
yeah.
I'm not into the crab, but I like scallops, like raw scallops. So we went to some of like the fish places there, and they're like any of the fish markets in Japan, where they're like these little stalls, you know, they're really crowded. They're kind of like very temporary looking, but they've been there for 50 or 60 years.
And, well, that's a cool vibe.
It's a really cool vibe. Yeah. But the quality of the fish we got there was really, really good. We were getting some free scallop jerky. So they look like almost a butterscotch. You ever see butterscotch hard candy?
Yeah, yeah.
The wrapper was very similar to that. And then people would be really happy to like just give it to us if we bought something at their shop. And a couple of them, they open them into their hands and put them into our mouths, which my COVID alarms were going off left and right. But it was one of those situations where you just be so rude, you know, like some 80-year-old man so happy to give it to you. You gotta go in. But as you're doing it, you're just slow motion. Anyhow, yeah, so hotate jerky, which was what it sounds like.
You're at
squid jerky, it wasn't too far off from that.
I could imagine. Yeah.
But yeah, we went to really good like donbori shops with like fresh fish on top, and those are so good, and there's so many cool looking ones that we didn't get to go into. And yeah, again,
donbori, by the way, is like a rice
stuff
bowl
on, stuff
with,
on rice.
Yeah, yeah, with a bunch whatever fish roe or tuna or salmon or whatever you get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so those were good. My wife really liked those. I was super in the soup curry there, so I was like, I want to do is eat soup curry. So the big, I asked around, and this is the one I had come up with too. I was hoping to get a better like local answer once I was there. If you know me, then you'll know I really like Capitol. So I went up to the Capitol there.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're really nice.
That's a cool part of town.
Yeah. That's a really cool part of town. I recommend going for sure, even if you're not in the Capitol, but you're just interested in like clothing or artisanal things, because that's a very kind of workshop feel, that store.
Yeah. Some good cafes over there.
Yeah, and so I was asking what the soup curry recommendation was, and they gave the answer to the place I had found already, which was called Garaku, G-A-R-A-K-U. And there's like two or three of them around town. And
I was hoping to get coconut soup curry. I'm a big coconut fan. And Matt had mentioned that he'd gotten a coconut soup curry. But this place didn't have that. But it was still really, really good. I had about three or four places when I was there. And I will say it's the one to get. They have like a package at the airport, you know, for omiyage you can buy. And I was, because of that, I was kind of turned off. I was like, I don't want the one that's already omiyage'd out. And like, I got to find somewhere better. And I went to some hole in the wall, smaller places. But yeah, Karaku is, I think, the best.
That was the top
place. Really good quality, like pork. And then the base of it, I don't know how to describe it, but I guess kind of umami, like a very lingering, deep flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those ones where you're trying to figure out what's in here, what is this? And you keep eating it. And I just kept eating it, like, what is this? And it was gone by the time I could never quite figure out like how to describe the flavor.
Yeah.
But yeah, not coconut for sure. And not fishy either. So I don't know, yeah, it's a nice kind of multi-level taste. So many vegetables, you know, I'm a big, believe it or not, it's kind of hard to get vegetables in a lot of Japanese food, eating out at restaurants.
Yeah.
Home meals are different. And it's a really just nice meal. You can get pretty quick and just tons of vegetables, like kind of rare vegetables too.
Yeah.
Lotus root and eggplant, asparagus. And they kind of fry them very, very lightly so that it doesn't get soggy.
Yeah, or grill them, you know, on the grill. The broccoli, I had broccoli in one, and that broccoli was
the broccoli's the
top
best part.
Notch, yeah.
My wife kept saying too, she's like, I'm not usually crazy about broccoli, but this is like the best broccoli.
Yeah.
And you can kind of get one of each one, which is kind of funny too. I think if you're back home, you're like, wow, someone's picked one of each vegetable and put it in. But it's kind of a tease because you like broccoli. It's like, I get that one broccoli, you know?
And carrot too. Like, I had some carrots on there that were like, wow, those are good.
So my first impression of soup curry, I had it 10 years ago out in Shimokitazawa in Tokyo. And I was like, yeah, I love curry, but that wasn't really a great curry for me. This is kind of light. So yeah, you got to go to the right place. Yeah, I don't think you necessarily have to be in Hokkaido to get it, but it's very prevalent there, and it came from there.
Yeah.
I got a soup
curry for you here in Osaka.
Let's go. We'll talk about it in an episode one day.
Or not. It might be another top secret place where you got to reach out to us to get the knowledge.
Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of part one, is Sapporo. We'll take a break and we'll come back and I'll talk about snowboarding and Niseko.
Before we go to break, there is one last thing I do want to ask you, which was, what do you think about English in Sapporo?
I'm really glad you asked this. Yeah, I was telling someone about this topic the other day.
When I was there, I was surprised by like how English friendly it is, like compared to other places in Japan.
My review too, and that person, the coworker, I was telling them, they're like, really? Are you sure? Like, they'd been there long time ago, they went 10 years ago or something. And then I started second guessing myself. I'm like, well, maybe I'm just more into like Western places. But yeah, that was totally my gut reaction too, is everywhere I went, the people could speak some English.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is surprising because it's so far away from civilization, like any other kind of big Western city.
Yeah. I wouldn't say people were any more friendly than they are, you know, like in any other place in Japan. You know, like I didn't have people coming up to me, but if I said, oh, do you speak English? You know, a lot of times they would oblige, and they're usually like some of the best English I've heard in Japan.
Exactly, like, same, yeah.
A couple of times I went in places where I was like, man, then you're a fluid English speaker.
Even the old, like for me, I was mostly dealing with, I'd say, people 55 or older there at most of the shops, and they were the ones speaking English, which, you know, usually isn't what you think of.
Yeah,
so, yeah. We speak Japanese, but then our Japanese is just so bad at a point that they would switch over to English, and it was always like, oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
It reminded me of Kyoto in that way, or maybe Tokyo even.
Yeah. I was playing the tourist card when I went there, I was just like, oh yeah, I'm just from the States, you know? So I didn't have to say I've been here for so many years and my Japanese is so poor.
That's right. But Sapporo, I went 2 days. Obviously, it shouldn't be enough for any city, but it wasn't enough there. So I do look forward to going back.
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking a lot about, like, first travelers, because I know a lot of people are waiting to come to Japan. And I was thinking, if you're going to make a trip itinerary, you might want to make Sapporo your last stop for that reason. Like, if you don't speak Japanese and you come out, and you're starting to get a little bit tired, you know, because you've been around and it's hard to order things and stuff like that. Sapporo would be a great place to finish your trip because then you could just, you know, kind of have a touristy situation.
You could appreciate Sapporo more after the hustle and bustle and kind of crowdedness of regular Japan.
So yeah, it's a good cool off spot.
Get some nature up there and that you'll probably be missing. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, just a thought.
Yeah, so Sapporo gets 2 thumbs up, Japan 2.0.
Yeah, what is their scale? Do we have a scale?
Oh, 2.0 has got to be the highest.
We have 4 thumbs, so it should be 4 thumbs up is all like right. The ultimate, you know?
I guess. I was trying to keep it with the 2.0. You
know? Oh, okay, yeah, it gets a 2.0.
A very strict scale. The 2 is the highest, you know?
Oh, that's good. I like that. One thumb from me, one thumb from you.
That's right. All right.
We'll be back. And we're back.
It's in the Seko we go. So yes. If you're interested in following the same exact path that I did, you can take a chartered bus from Sapporo to Niseko. It's about 2 hours. And I picked it up in a random hotel lobby, which is kind of interesting. There's only one bus per day. And I was very worried I was going to miss that bus, you know, because you sit around and wait another day. But sure enough, it was there. It was like, it's pretty expensive, actually. It was like $50, I'd say, $60.
Okay.
Well, for a family, it became expensive.
Yeah. Why did you choose Niseko? Because aren't there other places in Sapporo to go snowboarding? In Hokkaido, for sure, there's definitely
multiple
places.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed to admit this, but Niseko is the most famous for, like, foreign kind of tourists, I would say in all of Japan for snowboarding. And it's also the most maybe high-end, I guess. You just go there and you can feel. If you've ever been skiing or snowboarding in Japan, you'll know that there's no life outside of the slopes. So once you're done skiing or snowboarding, there's just these really old kind of rust belt feeling towns.
Yeah.
Apparently after World War II, there was a big ski boom in Japan. I mean, not right after, I assume, but yeah, 10 years or so after. And a lot of the places seem like they haven't honestly had much of a facelift since then.
Yeah.
And food options.
It seems like ski places, because I snowboarded in Korea,
okay.
And I got a very similar vibe where I was like, oh, I guess there's nothing else to do other than, you know, this one cafe and this one restaurant.
It almost feels like a bit of a tourist attraction, like a pretty big ski resort is. You know, they're going to have all these restaurants and shops.
Breweries, pizza shops.
Right.
Yeah.
So, look, if I'm going by myself, honestly, I just want to go where the snow's best, and I don't care at all about the restaurants or anything, but I'm kind of going on a family trip, and my wife's, you know, not that into snowboarding, so I was trying to look out for something for her that would have the most life outside of the slopes, and everyone kept pointing to Nagano, where I went before and talked about a bit on a previous episode, was one of the spots, but everyone said, Niseko is even more like a built up and kind of modern and very, very Western.
I have another question that's kind of along the lines of travel for snowboarding.
Yeah.
Did you bring your gear or did you end up renting gear?
That's a good question. Well, we took a budget airline, which if you've flown on one of those in the last 5 years, you'll know they charge you for everything. So those charges were similar price to sending it by mail. So I just thought, well, if I had to bring on an airplane, that's still annoying enough to take a train for 2 hours to get to the airport and you got all this gear. And so I was like, they come straight to your house if you use Yamato or Kudo Neko, same difference. They'll come to your house for no extra charge and just pick it up at your house, like at your doorstep.
Yeah.
And you can arrange that all in English through email if you want or by phone.
Did you have to wrap it, like wrap everything and stuff?
That's a good question, yeah. The suitcases, there's no wrapping. I guess you could if you wanted to. But the snowboard, I have a case for it, actually. Uh-huh. I bought a hard off for $10.
Yeah, nice.
But they even said, can you wrap your case? Can you get a case for your case, basically?
Okay.
And because I'm a taller guy, my snowboard is bigger than the average size here. So they sold a plastic wrap to put on your snowboard suitcase for $2, 200 yen.
Okay.
But it was too small for the size of my snowboard.
Of course it was.
So I said, like, look, I can't buy. I'd be happy to buy your thing for 200 yen, but it's too big.
Yeah.
And they're like, the phrasing here is always very interesting. They always just say, like, you have to do this or you can't. Oftentimes it doesn't really mean that. It just means that you're gonna have to then kind of like sign off on, like, if anything happens to this, it's okay.
Yeah,
but that's very different from me saying, like, sorry, we can't ship your snowboard, you know?
Sure.
So I was like, is there any way? And they're like, yeah, it's fine. I was like, okay, well, the way you worded it was like this would be impossible, so I didn't do the extra wrapping. But yeah, you could. My son's board was enough to fit in the little case, so we bought that opportunity. And but I just keep that now. It's like really thick, nice material. So I just keep it around and wrap it up.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was like $30 each way for a snowboard.
Oh, that's great.
But it has all my boots and stuff in it. It's pretty heavy. And then a huge suitcase, you know, the biggest size kind of suitcase you can have, like on the roller wheels. Those are about $30 as well too. And that's more like, I've done it to Tokyo before, and I would say it's 2/3 the price to go to Tokyo. But, you know, this is a different island of Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a little more. So essentially for a whole family, it was like $100 each way to ship our stuff. So it's pretty cheap to fly to Sapporo, but once you start tagging in the buses and sending the luggage and sure. stuff, all that stuff can kind of add up. But yeah, it was really, really nice, man. The hotels are all used to that. I think that's how a lot of Japanese people travel. On the slip for it, there's even a separate section just for skis and golf clubs. So it's so common that on the slips you get, you just check off. It's a snowboard, because that's common to do.
Huh.
So it's all waiting for me in my room when I got there, you know, she's like super nice.
Oh,
like, you
that's
know, it's not the deal.
So
with any
cool,
of that stuff.
Yeah.
So I just travel with a backpack, you know, and then we show up there and all our luggage is there. So yeah, we show up there, luggage is there. I stayed at the nicest accommodation I've ever stayed at in my life. I'm generally whatever the cheapest is, you know, before COVID, that's how I was. Since COVID, you know, I'm comfortable spending about $100 a night on a place, I'd say normally. And you can get it for $100, you know, now I can get a place that normally run $300 a night or $400 a night during COVID. So instead of bringing down my price, which I could and save a lot of money, I've been paying the same amount, which is getting really nice accommodation. So I'd say it's kind of sophisticated my taste a bit. So anyhow, we paid $300 a night, which is more than I've ever paid to stay anywhere. But I'd say I'm guessing this is probably normally like $800, $900 a night kind of place. And if you've ever watched Terrace House, it was like, it really felt like you're on Terrace House, you know. It's pretty much just this huge,
like a log cabin,
huge house, yeah, fireplace, like Last Supper nice. Style table, just yes. The whole time I was there, I felt like imposter syndrome a bit.
Mm.
It was like hard to, it felt almost uncomfortable because I don't stay at nice places, you know. And we had like drivers picking us up. You just send them a line message, you'd be like, oh, hey, yeah, there's this restaurant. It's like a little far a walk. They'll take you there. They'll take you to the slopes any day, all the time. Like, it was like a van, you know, not
yeah.
a fancy car
That's
or anything.
Still nice, yeah.
But, yeah, and even, like, I wouldn't ask. Like, 8 hours would go by, and I wouldn't ask something, and they just line me. How are you doing? Do you need any recommendations for today? Do you want to go this? It was just so out of my league, you know? But, you know, oftentimes in Japan, when you're staying somewhere, you can, if you can open a big suitcase inside, fully open it, I can for us,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, that's a good size hotel room.
Yeah.
Because a lot of hotel rooms here, you can't even open your big suitcase without, you would have nowhere to walk. You know, you have to like jump over it or something.
Yeah.
So we were just like joking with ourselves, like, oh, we could have like 200 suitcases open. Yeah. It was like a house, you know?
When I had to quarantine, we had the first place, had enough room so we could both have our big suitcases open. You know, I mean, these were the suitcases we went back to the States with. So they're the massive ones,
right,
you know?
Right, right.
And but then the second place we went to, no way. We had to take turns opening those suitcases.
It's such a thing here that they often will even give you a device that you put the suitcase up on. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
it expands, it has like these seat belts on it.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, it was really nice digs. And the cool thing about Niseko in general is this mountain called Mount Yote. And I think technically it's actually a volcano. But it's a dormant volcano. And honestly, I think it's better looking than Fuji, and I think Fuji kind of steals the thunder from Mount Yote, and I don't know why more people don't talk about it. I'd never heard of it until I started planning this trip. And it's kind of like a lot of things in Japan. Right now we're in Sakura season. Unfortunately, Matt and I found the one park, I think, without any cherry blossoms.
No, it's got some over there.
That we can't see.
We can't see from here.
We know
they're there. Yeah, we thought this could be a Hanami, because we're actually recording outdoors. We haven't done this kind of on location recording.
Yeah, this is our first recording in
maybe 2 years.
2 years, year and a half.
Osaka was the last one,
I remember, at a cafe. Anyhow, so like cherry blossoms, and cities will kind of design, you know, parks and everything around this thing that's only there for 2 weeks out of the year. This whole area was definitely designed around this mountain, and every restaurant has some view of Mount Yote. I don't know how they do it, but you could just see this thing everywhere. I guess it's a big mountain, it's hard to miss. But yeah, the dining room, you know, just full like 30, you know, glass windows, you just open up and you see this mountain every morning. It was so awesome.
Mount Yote,
yeah. You can snowboard down it. But there's no lifts. You'd have to hike up to the top.
Oh, okay.
So you could see, you know, they look like ants. But I could see people coming down it and going up. It was really fun to kind of watch that when you have nothing else going on. But yeah, there are four resorts right across from Mount Yote. So as you're going down on the lifts, you see this awesome volcano like in your view, you know? It's so picturesque. And it just felt, if you play the newest Pokemon and you're a nerd like us, you'll know. I honestly think that mountain was based off of this one. Because they say that game is supposed to be like around Hokkaido.
Oh, right.
You know, I have the Kanto region, and this one's supposed to be like an archaic old name for Hokkaido, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't put that together. So I didn't know Mount Yote, so yeah, I don't know how I would have put it together.
Yeah, we all felt it must be that. But yeah, so anyway, I stayed in the Hirafu village area. There's four of so kind of villages known you can stay in. Hirafu is the one kind of with the most going on, the most modern. So there's like a big Burton downtown. And then there's normally this whole building besides Burton was shut down, but there'd normally be a lot of kind of really nice posh restaurants in there, but they're all closed because of COVID. Next to it is this Australian, I think, owned snowboard shop called Rhythm, and they're in all the big snowboard towns in Japan, and they're super awesome, super cool, bilingual. They got like cafes in there, and just these huge kind of like hangout spots, you know, you just see people lounging around, and they mostly deal with rental stuff, I think, and like the jackets, but kind of this like cultural hub, I guess I'd describe it. And again, it's just kind of crazy to be out in the middle of nowhere. If you listen to me talk about Nagano and just everyone speaking English, English is like the status quo language, you know, and you see a lot of very obviously non-Japanese people running around.
Did you rent jackets?
I have all my own stuff by now. I've been into it. But my wife is always 50-50, like trying to decide if she wants to get into snowboarding or not. She's kind of got a point now. I think if we go one more time where she spent more on rental gear than if we went and bought our own stuff, you know?
Yeah.
That's always the thing. Right? If you're renting, it's like, gosh, should I just buy? But she rented from them, and they're super nice. They gave us rides, too. You know, they're like, oh, we usually don't go that far. But all right, we'll take you to this mountain. You know?
Wow, cool.
But, yeah, so there's four resorts there. The one I would recommend most, unless you're, like, pro, you know, if you're, like, intermediate or below, would be called the Hanazono. Which is a good name.
Yeah,
Matt's first neighborhood in Japan.
Yeah, I love it.
So it's called Hanazono, and it is the complete opposite of Hanazono show in Osaka. Because this one's partnered with the Park Hyatt Hotel, which I didn't really know much about Park Hyatt, but I found out it's one of the highest level hotels. To me, I don't know, Marriott, Hilton, all those names, I just assumed they're the same. But yeah, this Park Hyatt was like extremely posh and modern. And they've redone all of it recently. So all the chairlifts and gondolas and stuff are like heated Italian leather seats.
What? Heated?
Seriously heated, yeah.
Wow.
And it's kind of weird. It feels like you wet your pants. I've never had a heated seat, heated car. I guess heated toilet seat I've had. But yeah. maybe that was the weird connotation I was having. But it's a little bit of an odd feeling. I'm not sure if I like it. But I'll tell you what, it beats the kind of people call them pizza boxes. Japan has these one seat chairlifts that apparently no other first world nation has, and it's just one little seat thing you go on. It's metal and you're swinging by it, you know, there's no bar going down.
I don't like that.
At the top of the mountains you'll have those, so yeah, it definitely beats that style. But anyhow, yeah, my son's new, so gondolas are like heaven because there's no chairlift to deal with running and getting off of, and you know, you just take your snowboard off and you sit in this nice gondola and it's all enclosed and you can play whatever music, you know, we're just listening to music and having conversations and looking up snowboard techniques in there. You got like nice 10-15 minutes of calm, you know. And yeah, man, it was a dream. You just, apparently lift lines are a big deal usually there. You might have to wait an hour or something, you know, just to go up. And yeah, we're just to the point where we're just snowboarding back into the line, where you're just not even really having to take off your board just for a second, you know, to get back on again. So you're just doing, you know, 100 runs a day.
Wow.
Know, just up and down all day.
Yeah, that sounds so cool.
Whole time's down where you just don't see one other person the whole time. All I'm seeing is the chairlift guy, you know? Yeah. Granted, there'd be other times where I'm seeing, you know, 20 people. Like, it just so happens you get in a clump of people or something, but
yeah
it was like owning the place to yourself.
So what kind of slopes do they have? Do they have like diamond slopes? Do they have bunny slopes? Like I mean, is it
like how, I what said? Is this the place, variation? Hanazono was kind of more of a beginner place apparently.
Uh-huh.
So they have magic carpet is what they call it out here. We used to call it toe lift or bunny lift.
Bunny slope.
But here it's called the magic carpet, and they got that. That's where my wife was going, and then they got like two or three greens, which are beginner, in case you know. They got like four or five reds, intermediate, and then they probably had like three or four blacks. I don't know if they're black diamond, but they're just black out here. And I don't do the blacks, to be honest, so I can't give you much of a
review. I did it once and I was like, I don't think I'm ever gonna do that again.
I will say they are, I've done one or two on this trip by accident, like I was just trying to get from point A to B and you had to go through one. And that's how these mountains are, man. They're all connected. So there's one called Hilafu in Hanazono, and you just pay 500 yen more off-season price. Then you get both, so you can go. And so I could walk to Hilafu from where I was staying, and I take the lift up to the top. And if you snowboard in a certain direction and hit the right course, then you'll end up at the other resort. So like you go over the mountain and you can like link up to this other resort. It was like a 25-minute car ride to get over to that area, but you can just snowboard there, you know?
Okay.
So that to me was just so cool to like cover all this ground, you know, that you have to take a car. You can just literally snowboard from one part of the town to the other to hit this restaurant or this bar cool. or something. Yeah. So Nagano on the other end has, I think, more resorts technically, but they're spread out like an hour from one to the other, 45 minutes from one to the other.
Okay.
It's a really spread out town. We didn't have a car when we went there, and the shuttle system didn't like satisfy all we wanted. We've taken some $40-$50 taxi rides, which were not a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Where in comparison, Niseko is definitely a little more concentrated. It's still pretty spread out, but it's more concentrated. The shuttle system was definitely more, we were there off season still, so everything was half price. So lift tickets were like $40 for a day. The normal price is like $80. My friend just went to Whistler in Vancouver, which is like their comparable, very, very famous spot. He said it was like $150-$160 for a lift ticket. So even peak season here, it's half the price. So it's much, much cheaper than those places. And again, there's, I can't imagine more posh and heated seats and like 10-person gondola, you know? So the cool thing too is that I've always wanted to try jumps, but I feel very intimidated to go to like the park area where everyone's doing backflips and 360s, and here I am getting like 1 foot of air, you know, and falling.
Yeah.
And yeah, I probably could have gone to that area and been the only person there. But also, on the normal runs at Hanazono, just off to the side, they often had like chest high jumps. Uh-huh. That's pretty small for snowboarding. When you get up close to it, it looks huge, but you realize that that's like the smallest they come in. And it was just so fun to just to try those without any real kind of commitment to having to go to the park. And for me, it really took my level up on snowboarding was just the way that those ones are built. There's a lot of risk-free, you can try new things, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You can go off into the trees for a little bit and come back in.
Okay.
And
well, that leads me to my next question, which was, what's the snow quality like? Because Japan is kind of famous for having, and Hokkaido especially is kind of famous for having some of the best powder snow.
There's a special name for it, do you know?
No.
Japao.
Japao.
You just see everywhere, there's stickers, Japao you can buy.
Oh, I love that.
It's great.
What a cool word.
I like it a lot.
Japao.
Yeah. My wife and I, we just say it every day when we're there.
Are there any songs about Japao? I mean, I wonder. Yeah,
that might have to be a song of the show, or maybe we got to record one. That'll be our first
Japao.
Song.
Japao.
So I mean, all of northern Japan is known for having powder, and I had a coworker tell me Japan gets the most snow in the world. Certain spots of Japan have the most snowfall in the world, and when I heard that, I thought, sounds like some kind of like Japan propaganda. You know, that maybe we've been sold. But sure enough, I think like in the five most accumulated snow spots in the world, Japan's got three of them, you know. Actually, Hokkaido isn't it. It's northern Honshu. It starts with an A.
Uh-huh.
So right before you get to Hokkaido, and Honshu is the number one. But yeah, I think Nagano is number two, and then Hokkaido actually is number three. I was worried about snow. It snowed like 80% of the time we were there.
Wow.
And just constant snowing. And the first time we got it, I thought this could be the last time I'm going to get fresh snow. I can't see a thing. It's a full whiteout. It's pretty windy. This is really dangerous conditions, but I gotta just keep going because, yeah, it's a totally different experience. And you're talking about the black diamonds. And what I was gonna say is that black diamond on a normal day is scary because it's icy and you go really, really fast. But when you're in like waist deep powder, you can just put your nose straight down the hill and you can't go that fast.
Yeah,
you
know?
Unless you. So that's another big thing is that the board types are totally different there.
Really?
I have like a normal, what I would call like a normal board.
Yeah.
But everyone up there is riding these powder boards and they're totally different.
Are they wider in the front or something?
Oftentimes they're one directional.
Okay.
So they're not symmetrical. So the tail is like, the most extreme one is like a fishtail style, right? It's like two points. Looks like an old surfboard.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the front would be like a sharp nose. So yeah, you can't ride switch, or you could, but it would feel very, very different.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're not that obviously directional, but they have their own company up there called Gintim Sticks, very like coveted in the world, because this kind of surf powder style is now kind of taking over the West, and so now in the States people are getting into this too.
Yeah.
I guess out in like Utah, Montana, and stuff, that you get kind of powder too. So you have to have this powder snow, and it's like a surf style. So they're whipping back and forth like these tight turns, and they do like these slashes, and this spits up all this snow, you know?
Yeah.
So you don't see a lot of, at least up here, I didn't see a lot of kind of Japanese riders, again, doing backflips and rails. A lot of the Western riders I saw were doing that stuff, but a lot of the Japanese guys and girls out there, where they'd find like these like hills and go up the hill and then like turn almost like a wave. Like they'd find something that looks like a wave and then like slash into the wave.
Huh.
Yeah, so this whole unique brand. Even Burton has their own line called like Family Tree, and it's kind of made for those conditions.
Uh-huh.
So my friend, I coincidentally ran into some coworkers up there. We didn't know they were going to be there. And they said they, on the second day, just rented a powder board. And they said it was a totally different experience. Like, you stay on top and you can go a little faster through that stuff.
Huh.
So anyhow, it's...
I'll have to look that up after this.
I love it. It's much less dangerous than the powder. Everything's slower. You do work harder, so you do find yourself more tired because it's more weighty. But yeah, it's like you're floating, or it's like you're flying. And it's one of those things, it's like, oh, this is snowboarding. And like, I don't want to ever go snowboarding in another place again. It's not the same.
Oh man, I'm getting so jealous. This is something I totally sounds like I want to do.
It's a blessing and a curse. Because honestly, then this following weekend, we're like, oh, let's go again. You know, it's so fun. I was like, I don't know. It's going to be crowded. And snow quality is going to be all icy. And I mean, you gotta go. You can't go to Hokkaido every time that you're gonna go snowboarding, you know? But it's the kind of thing that's like, you know what? Maybe I want to replace my, you know, yearly Tokyo trip with going to Hokkaido, because it's so fun, and I don't know how to describe it.
So you're saying Fuji Rock is out?
Well, that's different. That's different. From, it is, by the way, they just put out the lineup for Fuji Rock. It's super late this year. Yeah. So this is the first year they're asking you to buy tickets before you can even see one person on the bill. So if you wanted the early ticket that you get for the cheapest price, you had to just commit. Where always before, they'd at least give you some of the headliners.
Oh, really? So now, so those early tickets are done.
But just 2 days ago, they released it, and it's really, really, really weak. Now,
Japanese artists?
I was going to say, now I shouldn't be saying that because we're, you know, Japanese podcasts. When I say it's weak, it means it's mostly Japanese artists, and there's not a lot of Western names on there. There's no... I'm trying to think of our podcast. I don't think there's any. Poonpei is there.
Okay.
I think he's one of the only guys that we've played on this show that's going to be there. But to be honest with you, I've not gone through and translated the names. That's what I have to do.
Because
a lot of them are pretty kanji-heavy names up there. So I've not seen who's there. So I shouldn't say yet, but if you're listening to this, go check out the Fuji Rock lineup. You can see what's there. They did Summer Sonic's been announced already. And that's kind of normal, like what it's always been, where this definitely feels like it's affected by COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting how Summer Sonic's getting away with having Western acts there, but Fuji Rock is there. There are some. The Foles, I think, are the biggest name. They're like a British rock band from the 2000s. They're like the biggest name.
I'd only know probably the... Right now, I'd probably only know the Japanese artists.
Right. Yeah. So I am, thinking of going as a family trip and doing camping there. But I don't know. My family is more into the Western music, so I don't know if they're going to be convinced. But there'll be many waves, so hopefully this one of the next waves are better. But anyway, wrapping up Niseko and snowboarding. Yeah, if you want some good restaurants and stuff, it is really expensive, Niseko. I'd say the food and lodging and all that's probably double the price of Nagano. And I can't fully say in my experience which one's better snow quality, because I went at different times and different seasons. I went to Nagano really early season. My experience, you know, Hokkaido was way better. I would say my experience there was twice as good as Nagano, and the prices were twice as high, so it's justified, you know?
Yeah.
But from everyone I talked to, they said Nagano's, you know, just as good in terms of the snow quality.
Okay.
So you could go to Nagano. You can drive there from where we're at, 6 hours. If you're in Tokyo, there's a direct train, which I'm jealous of because it looks like it's the same distance from where we are. But there's like this fast direct train. It's like a 2-hour train from Shinjuku to Nagano.
Wow. And
it'll take you right. The Hakuba is the area that I liked. Again, a little more Western, internationally heavy, but there are other areas. So if you're looking to do it on a budget, you want really good snowboarding here, I'd say go to Nagano. If you're gonna kind of splurge a bit and go out, say try Niseko.
Yeah.
But yeah,
sounds good.
It's, the hype is real. So, snowboarding
in Japan. What do you think? Is because I think in our first Hokkaido podcast, I mentioned like it seemed like a totally a place that I could retire. You know, Sapporo is a place where, you know, my wife and I said, oh yeah, we could totally retire here, you know, and probably live a pretty comfortable life, you know, and have all the things that we need, you know.
Houses are cheap there. I've looked into housing prices. I don't know, like, I'm into that idea of retiring in the countryside of Japan for sure, just mainly because it's all I can afford. If I could retire in Tokyo, I probably would. But I think there's other places that are, I think for me, Hokkaido's a little too off the grid, and that I'd have to fly to get down to Tokyo or Osaka for the couple things I want to do, you know?
Yeah.
Or for me, I don't know, I'll give away my ideal spot. My ideal spot might be Shiga, because it feels like away from everything, it is close to the mountains, but you can get to Kyoto in probably like 45 minutes or an hour, you know? That's the closest city. I don't know if retire is the right word, but I'd like to have, if I could have like a timeshare there, like a yearly timeshare, definitely.
Yeah.
Snowboarding, winter timeshare, yeah.
The insulation in those buildings are way better than ones
we got. We gotta talk about that before I go. That's a great point. Even though, again, there's snow up to my head, I should have brought some t-shirts. I really should have, because our accommodation, we have the windows open all the time. And I think we're just used to freezing down here. Because right now, today's a 50-degree day, and I'm cold. Matt's wearing his heaviest winter jacket.
Yeah.
And it was 30-degree days there. And honestly, around the apartment, I was just in my underwear and a t-shirt. Or sometimes I was just shirtless. Literally just shirtless, because we were sweating. And all the blankets were so thick. Like, it was so hot.
Yeah.
And everywhere we went, so hot.
We rented an Airbnb apartment, and we were like, it feels different, right? And when we turn on the heater, like, we didn't lose the heat. Like, we had to turn off the heater a few times and stuff. Or the air conditioning, I'm sorry. When we were there, it was air conditioning. But, you know, usually the, you know, you lose all of that when you have, like, these one single-pane windows that you get here in Japan. And there we were like, wow, it's trapping in all the, it was air conditioning when we were there. Uh-huh. I think I said heater, but yeah.
Yeah, I should have known, because Nagano was the same, actually. When we were in Nagano, I had it on the heat on 18. Normally, I'll do 18 cheap, you know? Like, but I'm at a hotel. At a hotel, I'll put it on 25. It was on 18, and I was hot, you know, at the place I stayed in, Hakuba. So even that's only, you know, 5-6 hour drive, but they could do it right there. So it's just so frustrating that, like, okay, if that exists, then why? Maybe you don't need to go like AAA tier insulation, but let's at least go a little bit in that direction.
Cause I thought, you know, probably the workaround you could do is you could probably buy like a small house and just say, I want this whole house delivered to know, some place in Kansai, you know? Yeah. And you just tear it down and then just have it transferred, you know?
It must be possible to get it here. Maybe it just costs more.
Yeah, maybe rich people have it, but, you know, us lowly.
Yeah, it's crazy to know.
Gotta struggle.
In that sense, it does feel like a different country. You know, there are little things like that. But yeah, I really, really like Hokkaido. It won't be the last time I'm going there. And hopefully next time it's together, Matt. That'd be cool.
Yeah. I've been wanting to snowboard. I have snowboard gear, actually. Like, I have some, like, pants and a jacket. But it's just one of those things every year that I kind of try to make plans and stuff. Something else comes up, or, you know, something crazy happens.
All winter 2022.
Yeah, should start making plans, yeah.
The next podcast will be snowboarding with Matt.
So the next podcast is coming winter.
That's right.
2022.
I didn't want to be too snowboard heavy, because I know that one's coming. Just like camping's coming.
Yeah.
We booked the camping trip.
That's right. So that's
really going to happen.
That camping part two... it's definitely Matt. Coming. It's yeah, gonna I'm going to be there for that one. Well, maybe we'll record it while we're we're camping.
We got to record it. Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening to Japan 2.0. Find us all over the internet at Japan 2.0. Rate us and review us on Spotify or iTunes or wherever you get fine podcasts. You know what? We don't do advertisements, so, you know, I recommend that people do give us a review, because that's basically all the payment we want for doing our podcast. And, you know, our hiatus is kind of coming to an end, so you know, we want to hear from you guys too. So you know, give us a review, write us on Twitter, write us on Instagram. You know, we've gotten a couple of appreciations on Twitter lately, and you know, I appreciate everybody that's
on Twitter.
That retweeted our episodes and stuff, and so I really appreciate that. And we're definitely looking forward to hearing from all you guys this year now that our hiatus is done. You know, if you have any ideas for podcasts or things you want to, you know, learn about in Japan or anything, that you just give us a shout.
Of course.
Yeah. We love hearing from you.
On our last Kata episode that we do, there's a Wednesday Campiella song in this world.
Let's do that one. That one's got to be that one.
All right. Yeah. It's one of our best songs. Their best songs. If you don't know, they got a new lead singer now. I actually was at Parko and Shinsaibashi yesterday, and her face was all over the place.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But
She's very Shinjuku, like Harajuku. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a fan anymore. They're okay. I like the generic songs,
but yeah, I miss Komi.
Komi, yeah.
Yeah.
She's getting artsy. If you follow her social media,
well, she's
getting off the grid more.
She's very high art, I think. Yeah.
York, Japanese York.
Yes, yes. That's a good comparison.
Anyhow, they got a song about Sapporo, an old one, an oldie but a goodie, and that's the only song you can choose for a Japan 2.0 episode about Hokkaido.
Unless we find a song about Japao! And then we're going to put Japao at the very end.
That's just going to be the ending of all of our shows from now.
That's going to be our catchphrase.
We never had an ending, but now it's just going to be...
Japao!
Japao!
See ya.
ファクトリーで経済的5倍濃縮のは風潮魅力キッコーマン麺味最高だないトゥナイ夜景の綺麗なデートは函館金森赤レンガ倉庫へ浮遊シャクシャクシャクシャイン新高町いつもかもこなかもくたん十勝バーベキューと白い恋人行進ニンニク丸セーバーターセンロッカティー日の富山バームクーヘン八木小運動氷爆祭りで雪と光織りなす祭典祭典地味に売れてる白熊ラーメン買いに朝日山動物園スノーモード同率流氷公園粉雪散らす3回転して八ノスミュージックノースライ行くぜ試せるみたい。